One, two, three, all the time.
We're live, ladies and gentlemen. What's up? It's hilarious seeing the two of you guys together. When your son told me he was your son, first of all, he instantly became my friend. And then, second of all, I was like, what is it like having John Witherspoon as a dad? That has got to be crazy.
But mind you, I only told you because he was asking me, because I go to the clubs all the time, hanging out and whatnot, and, you know, just kicking it with friends. And he said, who's at the club nowadays?
He's like, he was telling me, JD, who's the bringer there?
Who the funny one? Who the one? And I was like, I mean, there's a bunch of them. There's like, you know, Brennan, this, that, and that. I said, Joe's always there. He's got a bunch of people comes to his show. He's like, Joe Rogan. I'm like, I know Joe. That's my man. My man, Joe.
We worked together when I was at the comedy store.
Yeah.
And he told me to say hi.
Years ago.
Yeah.
So
last time I saw you, I think, was Caroline's in New York. We were doing, I was doing like the 8, and you were doing a 10 or something like that.
Oh, no, I would do 2 shows, but it probably was on a Thursday. You know, you probably did.
Something was happening. We were doing it close to each other. It was a long time ago.
A long time ago.
Like maybe 15 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. I haven't been there in a while. I haven't been to New York in a while. I stopped going to New York for about
Caroline's is a weird one. Have you done Caroline's?
I haven't done Caroline's.
It's like a touristy place.
All tourists. And foreigners.
It feels like
right,
you're doing...
Right in Times Square, right?
Yeah. It doesn't feel like you're doing stand-up in New York. It feels weird.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Feels like what people want New York to be, but they're from somewhere else. Like a good percentage of them are.
Guatemala.
But it's great.
Looking at you like
it's a great club.
Oh, yeah.
But it's just, you know, it's different than the Cellar or, you know. Dangerfields is my favorite. Mm. Joey Diaz was just down there, and he said he did Dangerfields like 5-6 nights.
I never did Dangerfields.
Nobody does Dangerfields.
No.
It's half full all the time. It's amazing.
They're still around.
Yeah, they're still around. Somebody's got to be selling coke.
Somebody must be on coke all the time to keep that place like that.
Well, the name alone probably brings people in, but it's an iconic place, man.
Yeah.
But
I like New York. I just haven't been back since Letterman gone. I don't go do his show anymore. I haven't been to Caroline's in about 3 years, 4 years.
But you do a lot of clubs in the road. We were talking about that before.
40 some clubs.
Wow. You know, 40 clubs a year?
You know, my agents come to my house in January. And they tell me all the clubs I got that year. They tell you what date we go over it. We go over every one of them. All right, June 15th, okay, you're going to be in so-and-so. Y'all like the money we're going to get? Yeah, okay, that's great. That's a go. So we do 40-something clubs. I said, man, this is too much work. I ain't been 52 weeks in a year.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I got to have some time off. What about me? Y'all worry about this money.
But when you have time off, all you do is complain about not being on the road.
I complain about people telling me what to eat, what to drink.
Oh, my goodness.
I like to get me a little taste every now and then. Everybody need a little taste.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying.
Everybody need a little. Keep the wolf off your back.
That's right.
So I give me a little taste.
The real problem is that travel, though. That's what we're talking about.
Oh, that's too much.
It's the air travel over and over and over again. And then we were freaking out about 837s, and you were explaining to us that mostly they use them in overseas and some Southwest. Oh, yeah,
and in African countries. And in Asian countries, they use them.
Well, they had like 2 planes that just got lost, right? One from Malaysia and the other ones.
I think that's all pilots doing all that.
Lex Friedman is a software engineer, and he specializes in AI. He's a professor at MIT. Mm-hmm. And he was explaining to me, basically the software glitch was making it nosedive.
Yeah.
What?
that's not something I would want
to
hear.
Not when I pay $2,200 to get my seat.
Well, if you're a software engineer, you would have to up the pilot or co-pilot to let them know, like, hey, someone has to, obviously they all know what they're doing in the cockpit, but does someone know what to do if the computer's going down?
Like, that's a really good question. You know? Like, do they have any training in how to reboot computers or is there a bypass or a workaround for the computers?
Yeah.
Lex does artificial intelligence. That's mostly what he does. He works on like cars, autonomous cars and planes and stuff. And he was talking about as these things get more and more updated, you just have glitches happen. It happens all the time with your phone, right? You get a new bug and Twitter just crash on you all the time, mm-hmm. and they release an update. Yeah. But if you're on a fucking plane,
what are you doing? Yeah, and how do you react?
How do you react? They practice it.
Yeah.
Wow,
you'd have to go through a flight simulation
that's scary.
There's a bug in the plane. Here we go.
How do they run over all that software before they put it on a plane?
You know, they had the plane that crashed. What was the last plane crash? That was where? In Africa?
I don't know.
There was two in short success. One was Russia.
No, it wasn't Russia. Yeah, no. I know. I think it was in Africa. Anyway, those pilots are trained to the end. They to the hilt. They train those pilots, but they don't know themselves. Some of the guys who's training the people, what the heck's going on? It was a pilot that was off work. That was on the plane just before this plane crashed. Same plane. They had trouble before. And he came out of his seat and went up to the cockpit and saved the plane.
Jesus Christ.
He knew what to do.
Yeah.
He the only one knew what to do on the plane.
Imagine being in that fucking plane, guy, looking down the aisle, watching that guy walk into the cockpit.
Yeah, what are you doing? You don't see no one. They protect that. They put the food cart in front of the.
Yeah.
Is that food cart stopping anybody?
No. But they got a bolt on the door.
Yeah.
All those doors. Yeah,
but the pilot is in the bathroom taking a boo boo.
Yeah.
That's what that is.
They don't have their own pilot's bathroom?
No, they can't fit it.
Can't fit it on a plane.
They blocked the area.
Yeah, they put that food cart there. See, yeah. I've seen that many times.
That's a weird move. Like, don't you have like a dedicated thing for it? Why is the food cart the thing you. Don't you have like a. Should have a gate.
Someone have another. Leap that.
Right. They should have another door. Just like the guy on the cockpit.
Yeah, they should have like some they had do one of those metal gates
in front of a store.
Glass windows. Yeah, have one of those. Click, clamp it down.
Well, they knew that didn't work because they had the riot in '66 and they tore all them down.
Oh, the gates on the doors. Oh. Yeah.
I remember that. I was watching them guys. It's something to do to the lock. That fucking flew.
This episode is brought to you by Manscaped. Guys, you're responsible for taking care of you, and that means spending some time cleaning yourself up. But I know that can be a challenge, especially when you're not sure what products or razors to use. So to help you get started, I want to recommend Manscaped. They can help you take care of all your grooming needs, even when it comes to your more sensitive areas. Or as our friends at Manscaped like to call them, the boys. Their trimmers, the Lawnmower 3.0 Plus, 4.0 Pro, and 5.0 Ultra are all equipped with skin-safe technology to help reduce the risk of grooming accidents. They're also waterproof and come with an LED spotlight so you can actually see what you're shaving. And I know that summer's coming, which means vacations and traveling for a lot of you. Well, Manscaped has you covered. Their trimmers come with a convenient travel case that you can easily pack and bring along. For the best you and your boys have ever looked, trust Manscaped. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code Rogan at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code Rogan at manscaped.com. Tap the banner to learn more. Skin-safe technology does not guarantee cut protection. This episode is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. If you're looking for something to do this summer, you might want to check out some of the upcoming fights. Even better, if you can catch them up close in person. It's quite an experience. But if you want to get the best seats, you have to act fast. And that's true for a lot of things in life, especially when it comes to hiring for your business. You need to hire the most talented people you can before the competition scoops them up. And to do that, you need ZipRecruiter. And luckily, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Rogan. Got your eye on a rock star candidate? ZipRecruiter's invite to apply feature lets you cut the line. Once you review ZipRecruiter's list of the most qualified candidates for your job, you can easily invite your top choices to apply to encourage them to apply sooner. So, amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Rogan to try it for free right now. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/Rogan. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Open.
Yeah, what could you do to stop someone from bum-rushing the cockpit? Like, those flight attendants are not going to stop it.
No, hell no.
Well, they should probably prepare planes with a flight attendant who has training like that in the future, like a female or a male who's just...
No, that's too much trouble. That's too much money. Too much money.
Too much money to
do it. They're not going to do
that. Airplane security.
The pilot is locked in the bathroom. The other pilot and the stewardess is locked in the booth where they... fly the plane. So you ain't getting in there anyway.
I guess, yeah.
Unless when the pilot come out the bathroom.
I wonder
then
how.
Then he's not when he open the door, but they got the other guy, the stewardess got to come out. He got to go in. It's too complicated now. Then the people that's sitting down going to know what's happening. They're going to jump up.
I mean, know somebody better not trying to. That's chaos on a plane if you start seeing all that you're talking about.
Well, don't you think turbulence is chaos?
I was on a plane once and two dudes almost got into a fight. Yeah. The lady stopped serving them. One guy was putting his luggage in a spot above another dude's head. And the guy said, "That's for my stuff." And he said, "No, whoever gets there first is the one who gets it." And he's like, "Bullshit." And he's like grabbing his arm and got like physical for a second.
I took my bag off to get some out of my bag. I'm on the plane first. Some guy walked past me. I said, "Okay, excuse me." And then I'm looking for my stuff. He going to put it. Hey, bro. You see this bag here? That going up there. He said, "Well, you should have had it up there." I looked at this sucker. He said, "Sorry, sir." And he got in his seat. Now, he's sitting next to me, too.
Oh, for the rest of the flight?
Whole flight. He ain't said nothing.
I said, man,
get the hell out of my way. Take that crap out of here. He thought I was a crazy man.
Tough guy, huh?
I wasn't tough. I just didn't know. The plane is full now.
Yeah.
One seat next to me open. He gonna put his stuff down. I'm getting my stuff, trying to find my earphones. This punk gonna put his stuff up there in front of you. Before you just come in, there's a place for you above my head. I'm in my bag. You don't think that's my bag?
Yeah, because you were going through your bag to put the stuff up there.
I'm doing like this, looking for my thing.
Some people just look for an opportunity to be a dick.
Yeah.
And I think planes are the closest that people get to walking that emulates road rage.
Yeah, the line. Yeah.
It's the closest thing. Like when people get up and they get up too soon and then like they're pushing forward already. And you're like, come on, man.
Yeah.
Let everybody get up in the line.
Some people are like, nah, F
don't
that.
Push through.
Yeah. I was at the gas station just now. And you know how they have the big oil tankers? They have to bring the gas to the gas station. They were blocking in where people needed to go to park, and the guy who was there was telling me that some lady was just there and she was mad at him because he pulled in a few minutes after she parked to get gas in her car, and he was saying that she was like, "You're blocking me in." He's like, "Lady, I'm either gonna block you in or I'm blocking the street. I can't block the full street with all the traffic." And then by the time she was ready to go, she finally was like nudging her way out of the gas station. And the guy was trying to help her. And she's like, "Don't help me. I don't need your help. All right." And she's like, and he said, "I'm sorry, it's going to be a minute." She's like, "I don't got a minute." And then I asked him, I was like, "What kind of car is she driving?" he was like, "A Range Rover, new Range Rover." I'm like, "Oh, she's got plenty of time.
She's got a minute." She'll be okay. Too.
So one guy put his seat back before the plane took off. You know, get comfortable, he had a seat all the way back. And some guy, hey, buddy. You cannot put your seat back before the plane get up in the air. He said, "What the fuck? What?"
Got your knees on somebody's legs. I got the back of the chair on someone's knees.
He said, "Buddy, I've been doing this for 20, 30 years." He said, "I don't give a fuck what you've been doing. You cannot do it today." They got into a spat. Oh, my God.
Two passengers. That's what. Why is one passenger playing cop?
Yeah.
That's just how it is.
Seat cop.
Seat cop. There's videos of that all the time, though. I remember I saw one of them out here leaving leaving Burbank, and it was like two guys who either the plane just landed or they were just about to take off, got into a full fist fight over, and mind you, it's a Southwest flight over a seat that didn't belong to anyone, you know, because over there at that airport, they're probably going from Burbank to Vegas, and the dude was like, "Hey, man, I'm taking that seat." No, that's mine. And then next thing you know, it's a fight in between the aisle.
It is crazy that they serve you booze on the plane, you can get drunk at the airport, you can get alcohol is a drug, and that drug is everywhere that's flying. It's 100% set up.
But you can't bring any alcohol through security.
No.
We use any liquor. Our security. We're going to use our alcohol.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
And they'll pour that stuff, brother. Then they all know me on the plane. So they give me a bottle to go. You think of Mr. Witherspoon, wrap it up in a towel. Big fucking towel. Well, I'm going to sneak out of here with this big ass bottle and a towel. But I do it. I put it right in that book. I put it under that bag.
I get it. You know, they don't want like liquid bombs or some shit. They don't want you bringing something on the plane.
Right. It's
true. I get it.
It's true.
I wish that wasn't something you ever had to think about. But if it happens once every few years, it's enough that you got to have to think about it.
Yeah. Think about it. You know, you can't have three ounces liquid in your bag. So I had a 3-ounce bottle of my expensive cologne, but I use half of it. So I ain't got no 3 ounces. I got 1.5 now. They said, we got to take the whole thing. I said, no, what, how you going to take all the Michael on that clump? Cost me about $300. Sir, I'm taking $150 just because you got, they took my cologne.
Did you spray it on yourself before getting on?
One more pump for the road.
I sprayed this on everybody else too. that was, but they serious about that.
Yeah.
Some dudes still rock cologne.
Heavy. I wear cologne.
Heavy.
Like it?
I get it from Bertolf Goodman. I get this stuff. See, when I grew up, it was a lot of pimps around the neighborhood, and they wore the best cologne. Them dudes were sharp, or they had be shiny. And they had cologne on, and they hit themselves like this. So when I got old, that's what I would do. I get the cologne like this.
You just start smacking yourself with it?
Pimps, them pimps used to crack me up, but they would be so sharp. Yeah, shoes be so shiny, and they get that cologne. I'm smelling me, talking to them. That boy smell good. I'm broke. I got about 3 cents in my pocket and holes on the bottom of my shoes. And then pimps be up there, yeah, little fella, yeah, you're going to be all right one day. Just hang out, you know, keep doing what you're doing. Keep doing what you're doing. Oh, boy.
You ever see Pimps Up, Hose Down?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Crazy.
The doctor. Yeah.
I know what's
see
his name.
The real life. It's like, yeah. Whoa, that's yeah. A weird life.
It is some clowns. They like clowns. They who get together, and that's what they do. And that's where they live. I used to be around 12th Street. You know, 12th, you weren't in Detroit. You were too young.
No, not
12th Street, Black Bottom. They call one place called Black Bottom. Hastings Street, all pimps and hoes. They had them big old hats on, and they didn't have back then. They didn't have high heel shoes on. You know them. What do you call them? Platforms.
Yeah.
Back then, Detroit was booming, right?
Oh, yeah. Like,
Detroit fell off quicker than any city in the Western world.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, it was the richest city in the world during the height of the car. Motor city.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because the factories closed.
Yeah.
And then when the factories closed, people had put their money into the house, the car, factory money.
Yeah.
They got that loan, see, because you got that, you've been here 15 years, you've got a good record, you got a good place. They give you a car and give you and a home. But when that's like a fail, boy, them people, oh my God, what am I going to do?
What caused it? Do you know? I mean, obviously,
factories move.
Manufacturing moving to Mexico and other
all that stuff,
third world countries.
Yeah. All that stuff, people.
A little bit of that.
Everybody before themselves.
Yeah.
General Motors, Ford, they were for themselves.
But a lot of companies are still there. It's just the but like a lot of car companies, you know, like Ford, right?
Mm-hmm.
General Motors,
not like it used to be.
GM,
yeah, you'd be surprised. Yeah,
they're still there, but they're there in a much more limited role. But it's
limited or they're kind of like the base or kind of like the warehouse, or maybe they move that too. Maybe they're
you know that show Top Gear.
Yeah,
they do a new show called The Grand Tour. They do it on Amazon, and they did one episode where they went to Detroit, and they were in Detroit. They bought a house for like $2,000.
Oh yeah, you get
like a whole house.
So I could get
$2,000.
$2,000.
Like a fucking whole house, like a house.
That's crazy.
Like you could live in it. Like
yeah, oh yeah.
Wasn't a bad house.
Mm.
I mean, it needed some work.
But
for
everybody,
sure.
Everybody moved,
but nobody's there. Everybody's gone.
We were there, when what we drove through, it was like the amount of giant warehouses that are completely empty with all the shattered windows. Yep. It's very depressing. It's very it's very weird.
But it's coming back now. I was there.
Yes, it's coming back.
I was there 2 months ago. My brother had died. I went to his funeral, and we drove around. I couldn't find my grandfather's house. They tore that shit down. But you know, they had. Somebody burned it down, some stuff like that. But it was just like any other city to me.
It's coming back for sure. But it's also like, you know, there's a lot of young businesses are starting up and craft businesses. And, you know, when there's enough people around, people have ingenuity. They figure out a way. It's just not going to be what it used to be.
Yeah, and it's a whole new ball game now. Mm-hmm. It is a new ball game. New people. These people are young. My son, what's his name, Alexander?
Alex.
How old is he, 23?
23.
He loved Detroit. He'd never seen this many. We were downtown Detroit on Saturday night, warm, hot night. People walking around. There's beautiful women walking around there. Mm-hmm. My son went crazy. He said, let's go back to Detroit.
We don't go there, and you're from there. We just don't go to where his family's from a lot. So it's one of those things where
my family gone.
You got relatives.
I don't know them.
Yeah,
I don't know my brother's. I don't know my brother's daughter's cousin's brother.
And neither does Alex or me. That's why Alex was more inclined.
He was excited.
Yeah,
his nieces. Oh my God, they loved him.
Mm-hmm.
And they walked around. I said, look, I'm going back to the hotel. I was getting too much harassment, so I said, I'm going back to the hotel. So I told the driver, take me back. They can jump out. You can pick them up later. And they got a ride. So they got back to the hotel about 2-3 hours later, but I was sleeping by then.
Mm.
Well, but Detroit is nice. When I was there, I'm telling you, man, Detroit was nice.
Yeah, I did the Fox Theater, It's so old that they have these pillars in the wall that are like stained from cigarette smoke.
Yep.
Darkish, orangish stain just from nicotine.
But that's crazy.
A beautiful theater.
Yeah, beautiful
Fox theater.
They had to replace one of the pillars. Yeah. So they had one pillar that was clean, and then the other pillars, you go, whoa, that's cigarette smoke? And you get to really see it.
And everybody sang there. Frank Sinatra got his signature. Everybody got their signature all over the place.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I put my signature down about 20 times. I've been there about 8 times.
It's a great place.
I remember watching Temptations down there.
Oh, wow.
Temptations. Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers. That was a long time ago.
Wow.
But beautiful, beautiful place. All the other places torn down. The Olympia Stadium where they used to play and sing, and the Pistons used to play basketball there. They tore that place down. I saw Elvis Presley there. Elvis Presley. I was a little kid, and I saw Elvis.
I always wanted to go to see the Kronk Gym, but I think they tore that down,
I used to play basketball in Kronk's Gym.
Really?
You see, it used to be a basketball court there. Then they tore it, might have torn it down now, but they built boxing rings around there.
Oh.
So all the boxing, when we play ball, they've got boxing around there. I went up there one day with my shoes. I thought, what the hell happened here? They didn't close the doors and everything. Turned into boxing. A lot of great boxers. Tommy Hearns and them people came out of there.
Sure. Lennox Lewis.
Emmanuel Stewart.
Mm. Emmanuel Stewart was the head coach there until he died. Yeah, that was an amazing gym. But it was like one of those places. There's a few places where you want to go. Like when you're in L.A., you want to go to Wild Card. You just want to say you've been there.
I want to go to the cage where you commentate.
Anytime. Anytime.
Man, I
want to
see
them
people knock the crap out of them. Damn.
Let me know. Anytime you want to go. There's going to be some fights in California and Anaheim.
I want to look through the screen like this. Get that motherfucker! Oh, man.
We can get you pretty close.
Oh, my God.
We can get you right up there where you can hear the smacks.
I'd like to get real close and take a look at this boy. I can't believe that. That head do like this. I said, you got to knock the fuck out. That really serious about that.
Have you ever gone to one of them live?
No.
No, never?
Never.
Oh, yeah. Let's hook that up.
Yeah, that'd be funny.
Just imagine you should film him. You should film him.
I stay ready. I stay ready. I'll be like, so what are your feelings about the fight?
He should almost set up a tripod in front of him.
Oh, my God. Just reacting.
Oh,
yeah.
Man. Straight. I see it on
like
TV.
Like a GoPro or something.
Oh, yeah.
Front of you,
GoPro aimed at you.
And I love it when they do a little a thing on their background. They do a little piece on the background. And I saw one. This guy was woofing. Oh, he talking about, well, whenever I whip your ass, I want your wife to come over and clean my house. I want her to come and cook me a meal. She cook anything I want her to cook me. And this dude talking about, this guy was Brazilian. The guy, the opponent, he said, "Well, man, come on, man, you don't have to be there. Let's play and let's fight, and you ain't got to talk about my wife and stuff, man. You don't tell me what to do to this Italian or something like that."
Chael Sonnen is his name.
Yes, we
the Brazilian is Anderson Silva.
Oh yeah, that's, yeah,
yeah.
He's old now. One guy's old. He's about 43.
Probably
Anderson
Silva.
Anderson's 40. Chael might be a little older than that.
Yeah,
Anderson's greatest middleweight of all time.
Yeah.
First round, this boy put his foot up. The foot did like that.
Are you talking about the one where his ankle snapped? Are you talking about that one? Or are you talking about something?
No,
or are you talking
he's
about
talking
him
about a different one. He's talking about kicking him in the head.
It was a fight, but this I never seen a foot come up that quick, and the toes hitting the motherfucker. I said, I never seen nothing like this.
Oh,
and that boy did like that.
Fell asleep.
I think you're thinking of a different fight now.
Oh,
you're thinking of Vitor Belfort and Anderson Silva.
He was woofing.
Yeah.
And he running his
phone. That's the Vito Belfort one.
That's not
one.
The guy, though. That's,
the, that's the front kick to the face one. That's like a legendary kick.
Ooh,
the other one was Chael Sonnen. The Chael Sonnen one, he kicked him and then he dropped him and then he kneed him to the body and took him out with punches.
Unbelievable. How
talking to the mic there.
Unbelievable how he can work that foot.
How do you feel about your son's impression of you? It's really good.
He, well, he doesn't think it sounds like him at all. He doesn't. It's,
give me something.
Well, I only know it because this is how he talks to me all the time. He'll always be like, JD, what you doing today? You got work. You got to go sit back and talk to all them people. Hi.
Yeah.
He does all the noises. You know, like you'd be perfect for ASMR. We should just make that type of stuff.
Yeah.
Like him just breathing.
I was in line at the airport coming from, I think I was in St. Louis or something like that. And so I'm behind this lady, anybody in line, but two, three people in front of her, and I'm behind her. So I'm back there waiting, making my little noise. she was back. She was like an old Latino woman, Spanish woman. And she looked back, and she went back to looking forward. And then I said, "Well, I don't care, whatever."
This episode is brought to you by Simply Safe. With summer coming up, I bet a lot of you have plans to travel, which is great. You should get out and experience the world. But I also know how stressful traveling can be. That's why I want to recommend Simply Safe. It provides award-winning security and peace of mind so you can have one less thing to worry about when you're away from your home this summer. I think Simply Safe is a great option for home security because it protects your whole home, inside and out. It has a variety of cameras and sensors to detect the worst of the worst, including fires, floods, break-ins, and more. Simply Safe has your back, and I especially like how there's no contracts and a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you can try it out confidently and really see if Simply Safe is a good fit for you and your place. Everyone deserves to have peace of mind when they're away from home, and Simply Safe can help give you that. So try it out today. Right now, get 20% off any new Simply Safe system with Fast Protect monitoring at simplysafe.com/Rogan. That's simplysafe.com/Rogan. There's no safe like Simply Safe.
She said, "You make a lot of noise."
Wow.
She said, "You make a lot of noise, sir." I said, "I don't remember making any noise."
That's funny. You do when you got in the car today. You got in the car and you.
I gotta express myself.
It's noises and noises and questions. Those are it. Like the moment you get in the car. All right, JD, so how far we gotta go to get to Joe? And then we're driving 30 miles an hour. He's like, "I think you're going a little fast, don't you think? Going a little quick on the freeway." I'm like, we're on the freeway. It's 60 miles. I'm going slow right now. what is that? But no, his voice is just like one of many I've come across because I do voiceover and all that stuff. So it's one of those things where I'm lucky enough to have that one in my back pocket, because sometimes I'll throw it out there and people be like, "I don't know, a lot of people do a John Witherspoon impression. It's interesting."
We get some practice on it.
Yeah, man.
It's got to be nice though, seeing him get into show business, get into stand up.
I guess so.
You like it?
Yeah, he's
funny.
I came from 11 kids, so hope you be successful. I'm going to try my best to be successful.
He's too busy counting his coins to worry about my career.
God bless us all.
You're on your own, good luck.
He's supportive, but he's one of those guys where, because I didn't want to do entertainment at all when I was younger. I wanted to do art and whatnot. I was drawing. I used to go to college, and then I didn't know how to turn art into a career. So one of my friends was like, "Why don't you try acting? You're always wasting time in class making us laugh." And I was like, "Oh, that's an interesting idea." So I started like doing commercial acting and whatnot. But I have friends who are comics. Like, I don't usually bring up he's my dad. Like, it's something mm-hmm. that just randomly happens usually. Like, and when that comes across, they're like, oh, that's crazy. So you got like a well of information in the sense of being a good comic and writing and this and that. And I'm like, not yet. Like, not that I don't, but it's just asking him questions about stuff like that is the funniest stuff. Cause he's just very, like he just said, it's very flat out and just kind of like, JD, be funny.
How much more can you tell a guy though, really?
Yeah, just yeah. you just got to get your own, you know.
We were talking about that last night.
Yeah, people ask me, do you go to the clubs and look at your son and help him write? Hell no.
He doesn't. I've featured for him, and he doesn't watch my set. Like, I just go up and I do my time, and I come into the green room, and I'm like, "Hey, you ready to go?" And he's like, "Oh yeah, JD. They sound like they were laughing, so sound like you did all right." And I'm like, "Yeah, man. You
know? What is a father to do?"
My do you daddy ever didn't give do him any criticism or any pointers or anything?
Huh?
You ever give him any pointers? Any tips?
Better be funny. That's
the only one. I'm usually the one. I'm the one on the opposite spectrum, giving him tips about like how he can leverage like his, you know, his notoriety in this day and age on the internet. That's my thing.
Oh.
So it's one of those things where, like, if I have a question about stand up, I'll ask. But he doesn't, you know.
Yeah, you should definitely have a very active social media.
Yeah, like I help him run it. So
I see
good.
Yeah,
who's on there all the time? Kevin Hart's always on.
Well, always.
Here's the thing.
And Linnell, she's always on there.
Here's the thing. Literally creating his social media was just a fluke because one day, like five or 6 or 7 years ago, someone trended that he passed away. And because of that, we had to create social media for him. So when that happened, he's calling me and I'm getting calls from random people who know him. And also my cousins, like I got family calling me crying. Like, is he okay? Is everything okay? And he called me and he's like, JD, you got to help me. Something wrong on the internet. They think I'm gone. he's saying all my family is calling me and I don't want to talk to him. So we created him a Twitter that day. And then through Twitter, I told him, I'm like, well, just tell people you're around. And we tweeted out like, hey y'all, this is the real John Witherspoon, blah, blah, blah. Don't listen to those phonies making up them rumors. Because it was worldwide trending or whatever.
Wow.
Like hashtag RIP Pops or something. And then off of that, his Twitter gained like 25K in like an hour. And then later on down the road, he got into Instagram kind of randomly where he just he had an Instagram, didn't really post. And then I think one day you did just a random thing where he was rambling.
Yeah,
he was,
I talked to Megan and what's the name in?
Oh, he was making like a joke about like Bill Cosby and whatnot, and he was like, Bill can't mess around with them that stuff, Bill, and whatever. But other social media platforms randomly found it, reposted it, and now he's like, he went from like 6K to like 120.
Yeah, got a lot of people following me. I just don't do anything.
Yeah, he doesn't understand like how social media, you know, is like the future. But
well, it's
I try to keep him in a loop.
It's a great way to avoid doing morning radio. You don't like doing morning radio, do you?
Oh God, I hate doing. I get to get up Friday morning. I get to Kansas City at 10 o'clock that night, Thursday, tomorrow night. And then I have to get up Friday morning. I don't know the time or anything like that yet. But I probably do 3 or 4 radio stations.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
They drive you. And you're so sleepy.
Yeah.
And you drive back over here and go over here. You want something to eat?
You go take a nap later, and then you're still kind of wrecked when the first show rolls
Then you got to do 2 shows.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not fun. And I'm slowing down.
But if you build up your social media, you can cut that part of it out.
Really?
And yeah. I'm sure you have like relationships with some of those radio stations where you like them.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
you
want
to come in and do it. I mean, that's cool if you want to do it. But to have to do it, to have to do it. It's bad for your sleep. It's just it's not good for your brain either.
And you can post like a story or like mm-hmm. IG, or you could post an Instagram video saying like, hey, I'm going to be here this weekend.
Bill Bellamy does that.
Oh, yeah.
Cut it in half. Cut the time in half.
Yeah, you don't have to do that get up in the morning stuff.
But they want to see me.
Yeah.
These radio DJs.
Right.
They want to see Pops. They want to see Pops. Oh, man, this is legend coming in. I ain't no damn legend. I just needed some money. That's why I'm a comic. I go out and work all the time because I need money.
Definitely explain that, because I did have a question when I first started doing stand-up, and I was like, hey, Dad, from a motivational standpoint, I was like, hey, Dad, what got you into stand-up? What is it that, like, motivated you to want to do it? He looked at me and said, motivated me? I was broke. He's like, I was broke, and someone told me I was funny, so I went to California and got on stage and just started making dollars. I was like, so then what are you doing here? You don't even like this? He's like, I mean, it's all right. I do my thing, you know.
I'm not a comic who just loves to make people laugh.
What do you love to do? What do you love
to do? Count that money. Count that paper. Oh, my God. Let me tell you, sometime on the way home, see, if I had a good week, because some of them clubs pay a lot of damn money. They pay over $30,000 for 6 weeks, six nights, six shows a weekend. And I don't count the money, but when I do one-nighters, they have to pay you half of the money up front and then give you money just before you go on stage. So I have $14,000-$15,000 in my pocket, brother. I be on that plane feeling that money. I give him a glass of wine. I give him a tall glass of that.
These are his passions. These are his passion projects.
And I'm having a good time. And look at that. And I begin to count. I call the Bank of America to check out my account 4 o'clock in the morning. I punch in my thing, punch in this, and say, you have, your balance is. So, da, 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 da. I say,
that's so ridiculous. We got to get you the app. We got to just get you the Bank of America app. You save the phone call.
Well, I don't mind. I'd rather go through the motion. Hit your
you like to hear it tell you.
The last four numbers of your social security number. and then they say, your balance is. I said, oh, this is so wonderful. I was broke when I was coming up, man. 11
Where'd you
kids,
start?
Huh?
Where'd you start doing stand-up?
Back in Detroit.
In Detroit?
Yeah. I was, my brother used to go to acting class on Thursday, he and his wife. So I said, boy, that's pretty cool. I should try to be an actor. So I got in the Yellow Pages. They had them Yellow Pages. They don't have them now, though. Everybody got to go through their phone and get the number. But they had the Yellow Pages. I went to the Yellow Pages and went to an acting class, private acting lessons, and I called a guy. He said $25 an hour. Come on over, we can get started. So this teacher at John Binkelman's acting classes put in a comedy show once a year. And he said, I want you to be on the show. I said, I don't know nothing about no comedy. He said, well, this is very lucrative business. You can make a lot of money. I said, really? I went in there and stole the show.
Wow.
I said, wait a minute.
That's funny.
I went and stole the show. I used to do impressions of Nat King Cole, Johnny Mathis, and what's the boy, Joe Cocker, and all that stuff.
Oh, wow.
Old Mick Jagger. I used to do Mick Jagger. He's so cold. He's so cold. And they had about 500 people out there for the show. I'm bouncing across the stage like Joe Cocker, boy. It was so funny. And I got a stand ovation. And I said, wait a minute, I could probably make some money doing this.
So it really was money. Money was your number one motivation.
Oh, when you're broke, money is, you know, talking about love and affection. That's some bull.
He didn't have that luxury. No luxury.
Get out of my way so I can count this money.
Where did you start out in L.A.? What clubs did you start out here?
Oh, I drove from Detroit to L.A. I moved to New York. I moved to New York 1971. I was about 30 years old, 29, 30. And I went to New York to be a fashion model. I was a fashion model in Detroit.
Really?
Fashion, commercials. I worked at Cadillac Motor Car. And my job was plating bumpers, these big fucking bumpers. And so the bumpers, I would need the money, so I'm picking this sucker up. Because, you know, you're using adrenaline and you're losing endorphins and everything else you got in your body to kick in. Put that big bump on this fucking line so it'll keep going and get into the plating pit. So I have now the bumper go down, and I had about 3 minutes. I look at this magazine. I saw a guy standing next to a car. I said, I look better than that dude. Damn. I went to the Yellow Pages again. And got me a call, the acting lady, called the modeling schools. They said, oh, sure, come on in. They gave me a job that weekend. I thought I was hot until I went to New York. Them dude looked 10 times better than me. They talk, they talk. I said, you a model? He said, you a model? I'm a midget model. So I couldn't do that. So I got the hell out of there. I went back to New York. I stayed in New York 3 years, back to L.A., I mean, I went back to Detroit, got a car, and drove to L.A. by myself.
And when you went to L.A., you went to do stand-up?
Yeah, I went to do acting and
stand-up.
I cut that modeling out because that shit didn't work.
Where did you start out doing stand-up here?
At the Comedy Store.
The Store.
Yeah, I was the first one. I was there with Mitzi.
Wow.
I was there with Mitzi first started. Really? Sammy had the place. Sammy and Mitzi breaking up. Sammy went on the road. Sammy was a big, he was a big time comic. He working for Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin, all of them. He opening for them. Mitzi needed somebody. I needed a place. So I got a job. Mitzi gave me a job as the MC. Dave Letterman was the MC the first show. I MC the second show. He didn't have no money then either. He had a wife. He had a red truck and a dog named Bob. That's the only thing he came to L.A. with. And I just had this blue, Mustang I bought for about $150 to drive to L.A. And a $150 car drove to all the way to L.A.
Wow.
You know, I was determined to get out there and get me some of that money. that car leaked all the transmission fluid. I had to get out every 200 miles to fill the car back up with oil and transmission fluid.
Every 200 miles?
Every 200 miles. I'd be out there at night, man. You hear, oh, you hear that shit. And the only light you see is the headlights on the car. I got out there, boy, got my stick. I had a stick with me. And had a little funnel, put that oil in that car. Looking around, you know, I'll be doing it. Uh-huh. And got to California. No, I actually went to Las Vegas first. I got stuck in Las Vegas.
Yeah, he told me about that.
What happened?
I blew his money.
I had a guy tell me.
Try to keep this thing in front of you. Can you grab that?
Oh, here.
Yeah, man. Please stand in front of the mic.
Tell me. My friend, he rich boy, he said, look, just go to Las Vegas first. See what the comics are doing. And then you go to L.A., then you know what they're doing in Las Vegas. That's the comics they work in Las Vegas all the time. I went there, them old-ass joke, Jewish joke they playing, they tell it, but Gabe Kaplan, that's old funny, big head motherfucker ain't funny. He's a good actor. But he was, I waste all my time. He told me stay there half an hour. I mean, half of 30 days to stay there. So I paid up my rent for 30 days. And I went that night, got my new navy suit on and sharp as I can be, boy. Got modeling clothes, you know, I'm standing around, you know, had a big old afro. Man, I lost every dime I had at that fucking Horseshoe Casino. I went back home crying. So now I don't know what the hell I'm going to do. I drove 2.5 days across the country. And so I call people in Detroit to try to get some money. But, you know, when you call them, you're a long ways away. Anybody got no money. People don't answer the phone. They say, oh, no, I ain't got no money. Click. So I got some borrowed money from some of my friends and had to stay there for 6 months until I got enough money to go to L.A.
Well, you said that, didn't you tell me that you did one of the slot machines and it hit with like $3,000 or something?
I had $150 left. I saw Dinah Ross. See, what I would do, I would go at night and during the week, you can go to the front of the casinos and the guy in the front there, you say, I'm a comic. I just want to sit in the back here and watch the comic and I'm gone. They let you do that. You just sit there. Nobody's sitting there. You've got 2,000 seats in those places, something like that. So I had a dollar and a half left. I saw Dinah Ross. She had a great show. So on the way out, I said, I'm going to play this fucking money. I just be broke. My check is coming from the unemployment. It'll be here in another day or two. I can go without food for a day. Jesus. My stomach said, you better put some down here, nigga. So I put that money in the machine. It rung up, I think it was $7,000.
Really?
Yeah. I thought I fucked up something. Oh, shit, now what have I done? The guy came over. He said, I just got on job. Just hold on, sir. I just got here. You have struck the jackpot today. I said, what jackpot? He came and just put them $100 in my hand. It was like a miracle. It was like Moses came down and handed me some money or something. It was so damn, that money felt so good. I went home and packed my stuff. I had about 2 more days on my rent. I got in that car. I got me some gas. I drove, you know how they have in Vegas, they got the little island in the middle of the street. Drove over that damn thing, going back, going the other opposite direction. I said, hell with this. And when you go over island, constant boom, 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 boom. Combs come out, dust come out, old combs, old stuff come out all on all on your seat, on your hands, your feet be dirty, the dust be all over it. I drove all the way from 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, whatever time it was, I drove all the way back to LA. Oh man. My friend let me stay at her house for about a month. Candy, she was a good friend of mine. I'm glad she let me do that because that was amazing. She lived in Beverly Hills from apartment, a motel, I mean, and no money, eating a potato. Worst, I said, I know it's time for me to get some money. I'm eating a baked potato, a white potato now, with white potato and some old bread and some syrup. And I said, I got to get the fuck out of here. This ain't going to happen. This is not good for the kid. I come out here with big plans. And I went straight
to
her house, and I got a job at Gucci. And I went to the comic store and everything. I just stayed there.
If you didn't go to Vegas, would you have even got stuck?
No, I wouldn't have got stuck.
You wouldn't. So that's a six-month waiting game that you had to play because you lost your money on accident.
The worst. On I was purpose. Counting airplanes coming in and taking off because you can see them from my door. You see the plane come into Le Caron, I think the name of the hotel would be the plane terminal. They come in, you see them take off. That's all I did all day long. Plane coming in.
That's wild.
Plane taking off. Plane coming in, plane taking off.
And you just stuck there.
Stuck in Las Vegas. I learned. So I deserve my money. So people tell me, you love money? Yes, I deserve every dime. Because I went through the shits. Oh, my God. And that car lasted another 4 or 5 years.
Really?
65 Mustang. That's a great car.
It is a great car.
Regular gas. I got me some new tires. Like I told you, I got me some new tires. A case of oil and a case of transmission. And I never forgot, I got my old color TV and a bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Back then, when you were trying to get up in the store, how did the auditions go? What did they do?
No, you know, you had to go through the potluck.
You had to go through that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Same. Open mic. Yeah.
Same as today.
But it wasn't that many comics. They had to close at about 11 o'clock because no comics to go on anymore.
How many comics were there?
Oh, it must have been about 10, 15.
Really? And what year is this?
Huh?
What year is this?
74.
So it's the beginning. As soon as
Mitzi just started. Wow. I was there in the beginning. She liked me. She would get me. She, Johnny, come out of here and work the door. You can do anything you want. I said, I need a job, Mitzi. And so I hustled the door. Mitzi, she said, y'all better watch Johnny. He can make some money at that damn door. What I would do, I was maitre d' or something. What do you call
mm-hmm.
that?
Yeah.
Maitre d'. So I would put reserve signs in the front seats up there. Reserved for the owner's grandmother. Reserved for the mother's Mitzi's father. And so now the main room and the other room be crowded, packed. People. I said, we sold out, sir. He said, what are the tables up there for? I said, that's the owner's grandmother be here soon. He said, well, $500, put me in that seat. I said, right now. So I would make $200-$300 a night, sometimes $500,000. Just at the door. Mitzi, then she had me go MC and all that stuff.
You said $500,000? You meant $500,000.
Oh, no, it wasn't that kind of money.
Okay. Right.
That picture's her. That's Mitzi.
I know I recognize that picture.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's when she was younger, though.
Yeah, there's a photo that was from the comedy store that was sitting around the back room. And Taylor Boss,
he painted it. Yeah, that's when I knew her. When she was like that.
That's the picture.
There she is right there.
Yeah, that's the picture he used.
She was a smart lady.
Sure was.
Let me tell you something, brother. She was a whip. She had her ways.
Yeah, she was definitely eccentric, but she's one of the most important people ever in comedy.
In comedy, and people don't realize that.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't realize it. Mitzi was the shits. She and that little Paulie with his crazy ass running around, that little baby. I knew them all. I know Paulie since he was a baby. I know them all. Mitzi Hammond, Johnny, you got to come back. We don't have nobody to work the door. I get up and go over there. So I'm at the door. I got 8 o'clock show, 8 o'clock. So I'm emceeing and working the door and everything and hosting the room and all that. So I'm up there on stage. You've got a little rope you put across the door and close the curtain. And, you know, people come up in the original room, they come up the steps there. You know the original room?
Mm-hmm, yeah. Sure.
So she's in the booth taking money, taking pictures, taking money and selling tickets. She and I the only one there working. And the bar is in the back. So Mitzi, I'm on stage. Now I've got 10 people in the room. So she said, just go ahead and I get them, give me the cover and you go ahead and put the rope back. So now I'm up there I got 15 minutes. She said, about 3 minutes, 4 minutes into my act, Johnny, there are people in line. Come down here and let them in. You cannot do no more material. Come on, Johnny. I said, Mitzi, I'm trying to finish my act. Johnny, come on. I want to get this money. That's what I learned from her, too. I want to get this money before they turn around and go home.
Oh, God.
That was the funniest. She's the funniest lady. She's the funniest lady. Let me tell you, she was hot. She was tough. Mitzi was tough. She told me, you stick with me, I'll make you a rich man. I said, Mitzi, I come here to be a comic. I ain't come here to be no rich man. I come here to be a comic. But she's too much trouble, too much eccentric. I didn't want to hang around too long. Argus still there, out of his mind, see?
Argus is still there. He was there last night.
Yeah, I know it. I go there and see him. I see him all the time. When I go by there, I only go once a year or so. But I see Argus. I like Argus. He's talented.
He is.
A genius, but he didn't want to leave the comic store. He's got a radio station downstairs, he told me.
They have a podcast.
Oh, it's a podcast.
Yeah, they have a podcast studio. You ever been to that?
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Good studio.
Yeah.
But Mitzi, I've been knowing Mitzi. Let me tell you, I knew her in 1974 when I went over there. And I noticed when I got on open mic night for people who want to try to become on the regular show, Mitzi used to love impressionists. She loved people who can do voices. And I just realized that after about 3 weeks of being there trying to be funny, I'm doing old Red Fox jokes. The horse race was going and the jockey was riding on my dick. The horse name was my dick. This fucking Red Fox used to be. He would come by and he would be so fucking funny. So then the person come by and sing. She loved people to sing. Tina Turner. Women that sang Tina Turner. She put two or three of them right behind each other. They doing the same song.
Jesus.
I said, Mitzi going crazy, boy. Mitzi,
why do you think Tina she did Turner. That? Why
she would loved, she put she them loved on? Impressionists.
But she put them on back to back?
She loved the women. Because, you know, the women, all of them got the same impressions. But she put two or three of them on the same show.
Wow.
Same impressions. So I went up there. I started doing impressions because I did them in Detroit on the show there with Nat King Cole and him. She said, oh, Johnny, this is so wonderful. I want you to work Friday night. She put me on early. He put me on some nice times and shit. But she wanted me to stay with her on that door and emceeing, help her out. She had me close the place one day. I said, Miss, I shouldn't be responsible for this. You can't close the door. Just lock the fucking door.
Well, she's always had comics work there.
Yeah.
All the time.
When you go I wanted to work there. Most of them comics living in her house up there.
On the Crest Hill? Yeah.
Yeah, they lived on the hill there. She bought all the property around there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mitzi owned so much. She owned so much money when she died. Oh, my God. The house up on this house. The house that, you know the house she had up on the hill there?
Crest Hill, yeah.
That's what the name of the house, the street?
That was the one where a lot of comics lived in it, right?
No. The comics lived behind the comedy store up the hill. There's she one got of about those three too. Or four of those.
Yeah.
She owned about three or four. I went over there. She would have a party over there. The fucking party was fabulous. I'm overlooking California. And these dudes got the house all dirty. You know, they see where they didn't try to make the bed and the covers thrown on top of the bed, you know, just thrown, nothing tucked in, nothing. But Mitzi owned all that back up in there. Yeah.
I almost bought that Crest Hill house.
You know,
it was for sale back in the day. I went to look at it. But I had a dog, and I was pretty sure he was going to get out of that backyard. Yeah. I had a crazy dog. I was like, this is not a good yard.
It's the one right behind the store, right?
Yeah.
I think does Paulie have it? I think.
Paulie's got the one that's up and to the right.
Oh, okay.
He's got one that's at the top of the driveway. He owns it, I think.
Yeah. Right. I saw him. I saw him the other night at the store in the parking lot, and he was telling me like how he used to watch him.
Oh my God, I knew this little sucker. I didn't watch his ass. I watched him run to the wall and stuff.
Kinnison babysitting him, man. Huh? Kinnison used to babysit him too. That's crazy.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Kinnison, imagine leaving your fucking child with Kinnison.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Kinnison was. I told David Letterman, I said, Spoon, anybody new at the Comedy Store that's real funny? I said, man, you got to see this crazy dude named Sam Kinnison. And so he said, well, have him send me a tape or something, or give us a call on the show. I said, Dave, you're going to love him. Man, Sam went on that show, and Dave just fell on the floor. Sam was so funny. And Sam, I said, Sam, David Letterman want to see you on his show. He said, oh, really, Spoon? It's the first time he ever got on TV.
Wow.
And he was so, he always been my friend.
Sam?
Sam Kenneth always was my friend. So I used to work. Mitzi, after a while, she would get these young cats, like David Letterman, to be the MC of the first show. So I would work at the 12 o'clock show, all the crazy people on the show. Me, Paul Mooney, Sam Kenneson, all the, what's the boy name? And he talked like this. He do Elvis, and he did.
Andy Kaufman?
Andy Kaufman. I remember introducing him. I introduced all of them.
He said, my name is Andy Kaufman.
Yeah, I know. Just say, they come to me and tell me what they want me to, how they want me to introduce them, you know.
Right.
Just say, I can't come and Andy Kaufman. Shit. I'm looking at the dude like he's out of his fucking mind.
I'm Andy Kaufman.
Lenny Schultz, you ever seen
sure,
him?
Sure, Crazy Lenny.
Crazy Lenny with the pigs.
Yeah, he used to bring dolls on stage and punch them.
Oh wow!
Yeah, he had a baby to do about like remember the bear, Smokey the Bear. Only you could prevent.
Yeah, yeah.
He would pull out the bear. Only you could prevent forest fires. He goes, "Fuck you!" Yeah, and he punched the bear. It was so ridiculous.
And people would come down just to see Lenny.
He would go nuts. He was like really like had crazy expressions.
Yeah.
He was just an unbelievably funny guy, like a naturally funny guy. Yeah. He was an East Coast legend.
Oh, word?
Yeah, he's one of those guys.
Then he got, I think he had a lady broke up or something, and he got a divorce, or she moved out or something. Oh, my God. Then it was crazy then, boy. He would, the bears and all that shit that he would beat up. Oh, he was whipping their ass.
Did you know Bob Woods? Bob Woods is another legend, another like East Coast legend.
He's East Coast,
big giant guy. He was like a Long Island legend.
So he didn't play Comedy Store that much.
I don't think he ever made it out here.
Oh, he didn't make it out. Okay.
I don't know. There's a few of them. If he did, what time, JD? He didn't what stay.
Gotta go. I'm hanging. We're changing.
There's Bob Woods.
Yeah.
Oh, where?
Right there.
Oh no, I didn't know him. No.
Yeah, he was a Long Island legend.
Really?
It's like back in those days, like he was a legend in Long Island around the same time, like those Boston guys, like Lenny Clark.
Big time in Boston back then. I knew all the Boston guys. They were tough. They don't have a club there anymore.
They have Laugh Boston. They do local headliners. And they have Nick's Comedy Stop.
Yeah.
You know, Laugh Boston does guys that tour there go there too. But I mean, they still have some like good local talent. And then they do like the Wilbur. But it used to be there was like 10 fucking clubs.
The seats too fucking close. People
really? That's what I like.
Oh, but they got just people jammed into each other. Come in late. They come in late and they trying to get to the front when they got to see that. They take 30 minutes. I said, bring your ass on up here. Shit, jump over somebody.
jump over the divider. Yeah, come on.
I filmed my last special at the Wilbur.
At the Wilbur?
Yeah I loved it.
I like the club in Chicopee.
Oh, that place way out there.
About an hour and a half. You got to drive an hour and a half. And the club at the, what is the mall right there? They call it the other club? Used to be. What is the name of that club?
In Andover? Is that what you're thinking of?
No, it's right there at the mall, you know, where all the stores and things.
Oh, Faneuil Hall?
Faneuil Hall.
Yeah, the Comedy Connection Faneuil Hall. Connection. That's gone.
Yeah, that's gone. Yeah. It's been gone.
That was amazing. That was a good club. Yeah.
They want to hold about 400 or 500.
It was a big place. Yeah.
And you go, you do a show there and then drive all the way to Chicopee, an hour and a half. Then an hour and a half back and do another show on Friday. Oh, man. I can't do this. And then you go out to Chicopee. It's a Hawaiian Chinese Hawaiian restaurant.
Yeah.
And they try to give you enough to last a whole month.
What?
You eat, then they try to give you left to take with you.
To-go box.
To-go box that's bulging with food.
Yeah. They got to get rid of it.
Oh, my God. They're friendly. Excellent. And the food was excellent.
Yeah.
It's gone, I'm told.
Is it gone?
The kids didn't want to stay there. I think that's what it was. The mother and father died.
The kids didn't want to keep running the restaurant?
They didn't want to keep the place.
Yeah.
Beautiful place. And then near Hartford, Connecticut. Hartford. Chicopee's
in Massachusetts, Western Massachusetts.
Massachusetts, yeah. But those were the days, boy. Long-ass flight. But I love the fact that the airport was 10 minutes from the hotel.
Get you in, get you out.
Get me in, get out.
There was a lot of clubs back then.
Oh, a lot of clubs.
It's interesting. There's more comics now than ever, but I don't know if there's more clubs. It doesn't seem like
it. Well, they got a lot of clubs around, but they only book. They don't have showcase nights. Like they have 15, 20 comics. They don't have that. They have three comics, and that's all they have.
Yeah.
So they make their money. It's a whole different ball game.
There's like independent shows now. That's how it is nowadays. Like the club circuit's pretty kind of the same. There's some new clubs, but you know, I hear like most clubs on the road, like they're not like the ones out here or New York.
No,
because you don't get a chance to really showcase. You have to either already be somebody or
they book you in January.
Yeah, be on your way type of thing.
Yeah,
I've been booked. Kansas City. I've been booked January 2nd or 3rd. In Kansas City. When is it? Next this week is 20. It'll be June will be Friday or Saturday?
Some this weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Saturday. Saturday.
I've been booked 6 months on this bad boy already.
Jesus Christ. Six months solid.
Uh-huh. I'm talking about a book in this club 6 months ago. I'm booked all year for this year. I got dates. I wish I brought my stuff. I have dates that I know I'm gonna do in December 12th to the 15th. I think I'm going to be in Arlington, Texas. But I know that you do get with Chris Smith and them, but they want 10%. But they book your ass. If you want to get to a club, you can get that. they have you book your butt. You be in bed talking about book. I'm booked. I'm booked too much.
Do you still enjoy the shows, though?
No. I've had enough.
You know your fans may or may not watch or listen to this, right?
They know that it's hard work. Enough. It's hard work.
You're there performing, yeah. Right. Whenever I've done shows with him, the moment, because, you know, I'll hang out, because after every show, he'll try to sell merch and take pictures. But as soon as he gets in the green room, he's like, Jay, do you see how hard I work? You see this? You see all this I'm doing right here? You don't know nothing. You don't know nothing about this hard work. I'm like, okay.
Show business is tough.
Yeah, it's a
you
grind.
You do 5-6 weeks in a row. That's what I hate. Now I'm on my second of 5 weeks. The second week now. So I got to go next week. I go to Hartford, Connecticut. Hartford, Springfield. That's why you actually fly into that. Then I go to Memphis.
So wait, you said you hate it, but what? Why don't you just stop?
Paper.
you set him up. Yeah. You lob it his way.
Yeah. Well, the only time I've ever seen him do anything outside, because, you know, he's old school, so it's one of those things where he's so used to, like, you know, he's so used to, he got his agents, his managers, and he's so used to someone giving him work. So it's one of those things where I'm, you know, on the road, you're given the spots, you're given the clubs. And I was like, well, what do you like doing? Because you asked that earlier. And, like, the one thing that we've made between like him doing comedy and now is we created a YouTube channel for him where he does like a cooking show, right?
Ah.
So he has his own YouTube channel, because I do YouTube and all this stuff. I do like gaming videos and a bunch of other random stuff, sketches and vlogs. But he was like, well, I guess I got a little time off. We can do something random. He's like, maybe we can do this cooking idea I got. And I said, sure, let's do it. We create the channel, we make it, and it's called Cooking for Poor People.
Cooking for Poor People, because when you're hungry, everything tastes good.
Yes, and his channel is The John
Wood. So I eat a bunch of crap. I cook a bunch of crap.
But he,
like what kind of food?
Chicken feet and rice.
Chicken feet?
We did chicken feet, pig feet, oxtail.
I've had
chicken feet. What is chicken feet like?
tough. You got to be. You got
to
be. But you know,
he tried
eat,
to,
Asian people eat it. Chinese people eat it. Eat it every day.
He chicken. Tried to feed it to our dog, and our dog ran away from him. So that's like a clip from the video.
He don't know what a delicacy it was. That's what that was.
Yeah.
And then I recommend wine. I have wine. I have a tall glass of Mad Dog 2020 with the chicken feet. With them chicken feet.
And Thunderbird. Thunderbird wine.
Thunderbird wine.
Where do you even find
Cisco.
Where do you get Mad Dog 2020?
He's good at finding these.
That's a place right there on Van Nuys.
Really? Yeah.
Some Mexicans sell it.
Yeah.
And they're hanging out in the, you know, just like at old school, they're hanging out in the front with their bottle. They bring it down here and hide it behind the crate, and they bring it up and hit that thing.
Yeah.
Then you go buy some more, and I'm shocked that they had
there you go.
Hey, look at that.
So I helped him produce and create, help him work on this thing. But you know, it gets good. People,
look at that pig feet right there. Shelly threw my shit away. I can't believe she threw
the old pig feet away.
Ain't old.
I like the kitchen too.
Yeah, that's old school.
Whose kitchen is that?
It's his.
It's our house. We bought the house next to us.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I got the house next to me, and I tore the whole fence down.
Guest house kitchen.
And I got all that old kitchen. So I said, I'm going to leave that kitchen.
That's a perfect kitchen for like a show on cooking.
Yeah.
It's tight and old school. It reminds you of like growing up.
Yeah. And it works well. You know, I think we made maybe 12, 15 of these things. But people watch them. It's just one of those things where he works on the road. So whenever free time comes around, we used to sit back and knock them out and try to shoot them, and I would edit them. And whatnot, but now I'm busy, so he has an editor. So,
yeah, I got my man, what's his
but,
name?
But you know, I try to help him market it when it's like finished. I'm like, all right, post it on the social platforms, get it out there, and whatnot. And
what about a comedy special?
I've done that.
If you think about
Showtime,
you think about doing one now?
I did one. I paid for it myself, but my stomach too big. I looked at that damn stomach of mine. I said, oh man, what the fuck? I done spent $10,000 on him. With a $15,000 stomach. It was horrible.
How long ago was this that you filmed it?
Oh, I did it, though. I must have been, about 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago.
Did you release it?
No, I got it in my
That one. I thought you were talking about the one that's already done and out there.
No, that's called You Gotta Coordinate.
Yeah, that one was from Showtime.
So and you then, made one, you didn't release it because you didn't like your stomach?
I ain't like my stomach.
But you also didn't get anybody to finish like editing it, right?
That was the guys. It's all finished.
It's finished.
I didn't know that. What's the name? What's your friend name that does edit the animation and stuff?
Gabe.
Gabe did the album.
He did the artwork.
The artwork on it.
Oh, that's random. I didn't know you finished. I thought you always shelved that because you watched it and you didn't like the way it came out, and then you never finished editing and posts.
My stomach came out.
you better take that right now. Take that right now and sell that bad boy.
I gotta look at it. I hate to see myself. My stomach be.
Why don't you get somebody else to look at it?
I'm gonna do that.
Just walk away from it. Cut
that wine and bring that stomach down.
Everybody
and do your thing.
Need a little taste.
Never makes any sense. Never makes any sense.
Joe should have some wine here for me right now.
I'll get some if you like some.
Don't get Joe. Don't get him any.
We have wine in the back.
Oh my gosh.
A bunch of liquor on that. A bunch of whiskey.
He's just gonna shame himself later in the mirror. Just leave it.
Oh, look at that Joe got wine.
That big bottle is probably
going Joe got wine.
But you don't want to lose weight, right? You're not interested.
I want to lose weight, but then they say you got
to
stop.
He wants to lose it while drinking alcohol.
they want you to stop drinking.
Yeah,
you get or take it in increments. Do it break, dude.
I do. I get a bottle a day.
All right.
You drink a whole bottle a day?
Oh yeah.
You
should get together with Ron White,
dude.
No, he drank that hard shit. I don't want that shit. He drinking that shit. Tequila.
He drinks his own tequila. That's what he does.
Yeah, I saw that last night. He was in the back bar. Yeah, we were hanging out.
We had some of his tequila. Yeah.
He drank too much. I know that shit getting him fucked up on stage. I see him up there. He act like he can act like he's not drunk. That motherfucker drunk as he can be.
Ron White goes hard.
Yeah, he goes very hard.
He goes hard. He goes hard every fucking night of the week, too.
Yeah, that's tough.
It's tough.
Yeah.
But it's working out.
I drink white wine, Chardonnay.
Oh, and nice and light.
Then I drink like a little Cabernet Sauvignon.
A nice red.
Yeah, red wine. Yeah. And but then you get another one, and then maybe one more. And then you get the bottle and put it up to your mouth and drink your swig, and then put it away and go to bed. That ain't nothing bad.
Till the next day. Till the next bottle.
Out of all I got to give him a pee, drink, I give me another swig.
There's some evidence that wine's good for you. A little bit of wine. A little bit of wine's not bad for you.
A little bit.
Two glasses of wine a day for longevity and health.
Yeah, there you go.
How much wine's in the glass and how big the glass?
Glass.
I said, well, what about 10? If you're so good, what about 10 glasses? That's even better.
Man.
You gotta get you ready to go to work. You gotta go back.
I'm in no rush. I'd say something if I had somewhere to be.
I don't want you rushing down that freeway.
No.
He's
being a dad. Good for you. You stepping up to
I'm being a dad too, guy. I got money at home. I got a couch.
What?
It always comes full circle. No, I host a show.
Was he always like this?
Always. Oh no, people. No, I've got friends who ask me. So your dad just that's who he is, or is that a character? I'm like, oh no. He got on for being himself. Yeah, he's one of the lucky.
Himself.
Yeah, I told him that jokingly back in the day. I was like, you know, you lucky, right? He's like, what you mean? I was like, you're where you are because you are who you are. You don't have to fake it. You just go.
You're supposed to when you're acting. You should be yourself. Dude.
Yeah,
you're funny enough. You
definitely be yourself.
You better be yourself.
Yeah,
I'm on the cartoon. What is the Boondocks?
Mm-hmm. Uh huh.
I didn't change my voice for the Boondocks.
No.
I did that. And they're coming back. They're coming, but Boondocks are coming back.
That's a great show.
It's one of the best cartoons I've ever been
on. I met the dude who created it. He was friends with my friend Todd.
Yeah, Aaron McGruder.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We've been over.
Smart dude.
Yeah.
Very creative.
Very smart.
He did Black Jesus also. He wrote that too.
Yep.
Black Jesus.
Yeah. That's another one that you're on. That he fell into. That's the funny part, because remember what the thing is. I went in for that show to play one of the leads or whatever. It didn't happen, but I remember because he's friends with Aaron and whatnot. Aaron just called him in to do a 1 day role. Remember?
Yeah, he wanted me to. He said, John, we need your character to just do the pilot. And I was like, I tried, man. I don't feel like doing no Jesus, and I'm a homeless man, so. So, but I got into it. I thought it was cool.
Yeah.
So he said, you want the job? It's yours. I said, well, good.
So he went in to do like a guest star role, and then they were like, dang, he's funnier than what we were thinking. So so they gave him a role, and he was a series, right? You did three seasons. Well, you did two that aired, and then
we finished the third.
Did a third one, and it hasn't aired yet.
And I when I did Hollywood Shuffle, I played a man who had lost everything. He was homeless. So I'm sitting out there. And Robert Townsend didn't have any money for a wardrobe. So I went to the secondhand store in Goodwill and bought coveralls and an old shirt. And I had a T-shirt that I tore and put a pin to put it back up. So that was, I thought that was clever. So this happened 20 years ago. I kept that outfit in my garage for 20 years. And I used it on Black Jesus. Same thing I wore on the Hollywood Shuffle.
Wow.
Not Hollywood Shuffle. What was it? Whole Cake. What's the name of that?
Hollywood Shuffle. That's it.
That's Hollywood Shuffle.
Yeah, yeah.
There it is.
Yeah.
He got all that stuff.
But then they he wore it. They did their thing, and then they were like, well, this thing stinks, so we'll just recreate it for you.
They did everything over. Got the same outfit that I had. Look at that. I got Thunderbird wine. I got my little wine. Look at that.
Whatever happened to Robert Townsend? What is he up to?
He's a director now.
Just directing different movies?
Not a different movie. And commercials and things.
He used to do stand-up, too.
Oh, yeah. We used to go on tour with him. We worked all the big places.
I remember his specials.
Mm.
Yeah.
He always had those HBO comedy specials.
Yeah. Oh,
Damon
yeah.
Wayans did them. Yeah. A bunch of people did them.
Yeah, Robert Townsend. He's still around. I saw a picture on my phone. I don't know how. Where's my phone?
I don't know. It's probably in your jacket, man.
Oh, okay. I don't want to lose my phone.
He does that at home. He'll say, hey, I don't live with him. I'm grown. I'm married and all that stuff. I live on my own with my wife. He'll call me and say, JD, you seen my my cameras? I moved my camera and I don't know where it is. I was like, I don't live with you. I have no idea where your things are. He's like, well, you know. And my brother lives with him still. So it's one of those things where I'm like, why don't you ask Alex? He's around or someone who maybe is at the house more often. He's like, now I feel like you might be the one who might know what this thing is. Because I've seen you around here. I know you come around. You come take my things.
They take my stuff. That's what get me.
They take your stuff?
I get, no, I buy cameras. I buy a camera and put it over there. Because I know where it's at because it's over there. I come back, ain't over there now. I have no idea where it's at now because I put it over there.
That's
because
you and Mom and Alex and whoever else roams through the house will move things around all the time. I'm not there. I'm not there to move things.
But I know where I put things, and when I come back, it's not there.
But the thing is, why do you call me when I'm never there?
You know where they are.
See? Doesn't make any sense.
You and your mama.
Mom will take his stuff. Mom will go shoot her stuff because she like produces, does her little independent movies. So when she grabs your cameras, that's where they move to.
Did you feel pressure doing stand-up because this is your dad?
No, actually, I didn't want to do it. Never.
Really?
Because I got into acting and I thought that was far enough. I was like, oh, my dad already does that. I don't want to jump into the rest of that stuff. And acting was just kind of like on a whim. And then stand-up was like a dare. A friend of mine was like, we should, because we, back in the day, not too long ago, maybe early 2011 or 12, it's not back in the day, but me and my boys were hanging out one night in our 20s, and we just went, we had come from a club, and we drove past the Laugh Factory, and I was like, you guys want to go watch comedy? I don't know, I was like 24 or something. I was like, I used to know the owner knows me from when I was a baby. If he's there,
he's
maybe.
Babysit you.
Yeah, yeah, Jamie Masada. But when
buddy, I watch your baby, buddy.
That's his,
take care of baby
that's
for
his
you.
Introduction to every time I'm there. Whenever I do shows, that's his introduction for me. He'll be like, hey, buddy, I want you to meet Johnny Witherspoon's son. I used to carry him when he was baby.
I used to carry him around like a baby.
But we
bring him on stage.
Yeah, we went there. We went there randomly one night, and
that's so fucking funny. That's good. That's a good impression.
We went there randomly one night, and I remember the door guy. I was like, "Hey, is Jamie here?" And he's like, "Jamie who?" Like as if I didn't know him. I was back in there. I was like, "You know, the owner." And he's like, "Tell him JD Witherspoon's here." I didn't think anything of it. I don't use my name like that. But then he like comes down. He's like, buddy, what are you doing here? This and that. You're doing comedy? I'm like, no. Me and my friends, we just want to watch a show. And he's like, yeah, come in. Let's get him a bottle of wine, all that stuff. And we're just hanging out. But then later, like, you know, through the night, he was talking. He was like, so you're trying to do comedy like your dad? I was like, nah, I'm good. I don't care to do that. I'm fine. And my friends were with me. He's like, come on. He's like, you should try it. You're probably funny. Maybe even funnier than him, buddy. And I was like, I don't know. But then later on that same week, he was like, well, if you ever want to come by, he said, swing by, do the open mic or whatever. And my boy Henry, whatever.
Henry.
Yeah, Henry was like, hey, we should do that, man. That'd be kind of funny. You know, maybe we be comedians. I was like, nah, I don't think so. And then one night we just said, I think I had someone's email from the Laugh Factory and hit him up. And was like, hey, me and my buddy are going to come by. Maybe we can do the mic. And then they were like, yeah, sure, we'll throw you up, this and that. And my buddy Henry, he's the one who pressured me into it. We practiced our jokes on camera at home to see how that would look. It was the weirdest thing. It was so weird. I was getting into like creating content, and I was going to film school, and I was making like my YouTube videos. I was doing like sketch comedy on YouTube, and then we shot like a little thing. We watched it back. I was like, I guess. And then we went to the mic that night, and we went, I did it. I was at the back end of the lineup, so I actually had a decent crowd. It was like, because, you know, it starts off, there's nobody there, it's just comics. And then by the time it was my turn, it was like close to the 8 o'clock show. So it was like 35, 40 people. I had three jokes for my 3 minute set clean, and I did it, and they did all right. People laughed, and I was like, oh, okay, that's cool, random, you know? And I didn't think much of it. Henry bombed.
I know, he's upset.
Yeah, no, but it was just one of those things where after that,
Go ahead.
Which way is it?
Right up there, past the werewolf.
Where's the camera at?
No, the
camera's up here.
The camera's over there. You could. If you got to go piss, say it to the camera.
He just said it. He just said it.
Oh, man. But yeah, no, so we.
I got an old bladder.
Dude, your dad is when a trip. Well, he's so funny.
I got a bit about how when you just get old, you just don't care. You just don't care about what you say.
He doesn't
you,
give a fuck.
No, nah, not at all.
But also, like, that's part of who he is. Like, yeah. his part of his business is not giving a fuck.
Yeah. Pretty you much, know? Yeah.
How funny is he though, man?
That's. I mean, he's the funniest dude I personally know. That's how I categorize it. You know.
Oh,
that's it's.
I would think that like if that was my dad, I would feel a lot of pressure.
I think it's pressure if I from the beginning always wanted to do stand up. You know, kind of like a Michael Jordan thing. Right, I never right, like right. It was all a majority of the stuff I do now is very like. Just happenstance. It's like, oh, I just fell into this and I'm all right at it. So I'll just keep doing it. Why not?
You know, when it comes to things like YouTube and like, I know you do unboxing videos and game related videos.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you can kind of do that now. If you're an interesting person, you don't really need much.
No, definitely not with the internet.
Like,
no.
If he came along today, mm-hmm. if he just didn't exist and all of a sudden he exists, didn't have this giant body of work, mm-hmm. and you just put a camera on your dad, like, this is my dad. Your dad could be fucking famous today.
Blow up, yeah.
If he was like a guy that works at the post office, mm-hmm. just a regular guy.
Film this guy at the post office.
And you were telling your friends, like, my dad is the funniest fucking guy alive. And then you put a camera on him, he would blow up.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting and whatnot. I never really think of it because people always ask me when I was growing up, they'd be like, how is it that your dad, how do you feel? I used to get that all the time. Like kids would be like, your dad's whoever, blah, 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 famous, right. this and that, Friday, the Wayans brothers. And I'm just like, yeah, but you know, to me, he's just my dad. Like he's just a goofball.
It's normal.
Like to you guys, I get it. To you guys, you see somebody who's an entertainer and whatnot. I'm like, he's always like that.
Dude, how funny is he? He shelved his special because he didn't like his stomach.
Oh, he does funnier stuff. He does weirder stuff.
You gotta find that special and get it out.
Oh, I mean, we could post it. It's definitely he could sell it. And nowadays, he could hit up. I'm sure his people could hit up Netflix. Like we have a body of work.
Yeah,
people would watch it. That's the thing.
Yeah, could you talk him into doing a new special?
Gotta get that stomach down. I'll have to talk him into coming back here and hitting the gym.
Does he exercise?
He does, but the main thing is the consumption. I told you know, it's all right, let's cut back on drinking and then continue exercising, you'll see the change. I try to tell him do a drink every other day.
Doesn't sound like he's interested in that.
No, it doesn't, does it?
It sounds like he's 100% interested in drinking.
Or just enjoy. He's 100% enjoying that money and drinking my wine. Yeah, that's...
He's having a good time. He's back.
Yeah, man. But
He's living his life, enjoying it.
Yeah, but that's how I got into comedy. And then I just kept doing it. And my friend was like, yeah, now I'm good.
How many years are you doing it now?
I would say I started in 2012, but I want to say I didn't continue in the beginning so consistently. I did like mics for the first 2 years, and then I started getting booked on shows, and then I kind of got lazy. It was one of those things where everything I was doing, I would weigh my options. If something was more of an opportunity, I would do that over trying to get better at stand-up. Mm. But now I've been consistent for like 3 years, 3 to 4 years, just like grinding at it, because... I've made strides doing things and acting and creating content on the internet. So now I kind of have, I guess, a little bit of a cushion to just go and get good now, you know, because I've been working. So
you're doing other stuff.
Yeah.
You don't have to totally rely on it.
Well, it's one of those things where because I don't have to rely on it, it's that much more, something I want to approach. I'm like, oh, well, now I can like have fun. I don't feel pressured. Not with anything about that, but more like I don't feel pressure to get booked, right, get right, on a right. Get a special this
get
and that.
That money.
I just feel like, oh, I can just take time and get good now. Thumbs up.
Get that money. Yeah. You were around when Pryor was in his heyday.
Oh yeah,
that must have been something.
Oh yeah, we.
So you were just kind of that was in 1974 when you were just getting there. Pryor, that was he was in the peak.
He was already
he was in the peak, right?
Big time. Oh yeah, he was big time and.
What was that like?
He would, when I was around the Comedy Store, I was basically the host of the Comedy Store. When I emceed, you know, and I go to the door. If they have a problem, I go to the door and settle the problem and all this stuff. Just Mitzi won. She knew I'd do all this stuff in it. And wasn't fighting them, just being polite and stuff. And Richard would come in. I look in the back, Richard Pryor's in the back. I said, what the hell are you doing here, Richard? How you doing? He knew Paul Mooney. Mooney was in... David Banks, all these. Anytime you got all these guys at the Comedy Store, Richard wanted to do another album. So what happened is, Richard, first time I saw Richard in the back, I said, Richard, how you doing? Spoon, I just come by to see how you doing. I said, fine, I'm doing, Richard. He never come by to see how I'm doing. He's just saying this to set it up for he want to work on his act for a new album. So I said, Richard, everything fine? You want to drink? No, Spoon. I'll be fine. You want to go on stage? No. I just come by and see how you doing. I said, oh, well, how you doing, Richard? Blah, 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 blah. So I would go. I know to go away and come back. And so Richard, anything you want to drink? Then he want to drink now. See, he want to drink. He'd get up. Some little red drink he liked with olive, what do you call that, cherry in it. He liked that kind of stuff. And so I know to go away. I go away. They told me, Richard going to drive you crazy. Richard come by. Richard going to drive you crazy. So I go away, come back. Richard, everything all fine? You know, anything else you want? He said, want to go on stage? He said, no, Spoon, I don't want to go on stage. I just come in. I say, how you doing, Spoon? He always play with you. Hey, Spoon! How you doing? Be hollering Spoon real loud and shit. And so I go away and come back. I said, Richard, do 2 minutes. Some people said, Richard Pryor came by the comedy store. He said, sure, I'll go up there and do 2 minutes. He said, when do I go on? I said, you're going on right after this guy get off. I'll put you on right now. And he go up there and do two hours. Then he'll have his secretary call me the next day. He said, thanks for helping me get on stage. Helping me get on stage. He had to be pushed on stage.
That's so weird.
Yeah, that's amazing, ain't it? But Robin Williams, boop!
It would just run up there. Yes. But Richard would do like 2 hours? Was that a regular thing?
Hour and a half.
Regular thing, huh?
Well, his album, you know, he'd do his whole album. Then he had his writers in the back. Mooney would be there writing him, coaching him on stuff to say and all that stuff. He had all that. And then he would have 3 weeks in the original room where he would work every night. He'd come by every night.
Wow.
It ain't like some comics get too high and can't come by. He'll be by there every night. And so Mitzi put me on the show with him. So I would open the show and do 45 minutes, and then Richard would come home and do an hour and a half.
Mm.
And then we moved to the main room. After about about a month in the original room, then we moved to the main room. That's when, man, and people would draw so – Mitzi would make so much money. He would draw so many fucking people. Old hoes ain't been out on the street a long time with fur collars, fur coat on, fake fur coat on, pink and yellow and shit.
Yeah.
He would have, in the main room, he would have, oh my God, he had Mick Jagger, Willie Nelson. I talked Willie Nelson go up on the stage and sing a song in the original room.
Really?
Yeah. I said, really, you got your guitar? Yeah, I got it. I said, could you go up there and sing a song? I love Willie Nelson. He was so good. He's still around, though. I'm scared of the dude. I'm nervous. Don't be nervous with these fucking people. He went up there and sang one of his songs, boy. That was a thrill for me. So then we moved to the main room. But I would kill every night in an audience like that. I would get a stand ovation because I would do Mathis that I learned from Detroit. And Nat King Cole and them, I would do Johnny Mathis at my last bit, and I would do Al Green just before that. I saw Al Green throw roses out to the ladies one time. I was this theater down here. Anyway, he would throw roses, he hand roses to the ladies. So when I was working at the Comedy Store and I'm in front of Richard, I would get dandelions. A hand in front of the ladies. And some lady did exactly what I wanted her to say. She said, Al Green, give us roses. I said, boy, you lucky. These ain't plastic because I ain't got no damn money. I go home and watch these so I can get them back to you tomorrow night. And well, I did that. And then when Dan did Johnny Matthews, this is just impressions that I added to my act because there are a lot of ladies out there and they love that shit. And I got the women threw the roses back at my feet. I said, damn, this shit is cool in the motherfucker. And Richard told me, I said, Richard, everybody said, Richard, you should take Spoon on the road with you. You going on the tour? He said, oh, I love you, Spoon, but you're too funny. I can't have you out there on the road with me. He said I was too funny for him.
Wow.
And he took Finest, you know Finest Henderson?
Sure.
And Finest would do impressions instead. He did all the impressions. So he took him on the road.
He told you were too funny?
Spoon, you're too funny. I love you, but you're too damn funny. You're open for me. I don't want to be where I had to work that damn hard. The women would throw them roses back at my feet, boy, them dandelions.
That's hilarious.
That was a great compliment. But I have the billboard of the Comedy Store with Richard Pryor and John Witherspoon.
Wow.
I had it somewhere in my phone.
Yeah, I think Mom posted it. And then,
oh, yeah, she did.
And then I helped you repost it on your IG story, and then the Comedy Store screenshotted it and posted it. And
oh, whatnot. Did they?
Yeah, they did that. They did that like a month or two ago. Wow.
But older day, Richard Pryor had his own TV show. You know, he's on NBC at 8 o'clock, mm-hmm. and he was so fucking high, boy. Richard, I knew we weren't going to last. I knew that shit. We only did 4 shows. We had scheduled 22. Richard was too fucking high.
What was he high on?
Cocaine and vodka and stuff, you know. But I didn't have no money. I probably would have got me some if I had some money. I ain't had no damn money. I'm making this little $400 that they giving me for this week. He said, y'all ain't making no money, but I'm making $250,000 a show. I said, damn. Man.
Wow, he's making that much?
See, there you go. Look at that.
Richard Pryor and John Witherspoon. Wow.
I wish I had the year up there. Probably 77.
God, that's amazing.
77. But I know Richard. We used to go to his house every Sunday. Mm. We used to be at his house every Sunday. And he had a barbecue. He got a gym, boxing gym where you box, tennis court, swimming pool. He had about four acres over there. And I remember,
Where was it?
It's on Parthenia. That house there was for sale recently for about $4 million. But I don't think people realize that Richard Pryor lived in there. They don't want to do that because he'd be caught on fire over there.
Whoa.
Remember the time he got caught on fire?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was that house?
It was in the house there, yeah.
Fuck, I would love to own that.
That's
house.
In like Northridge or something, Parthenia.
Yeah, it's on Parthenia. We used to, when I was doing Black North Jesus, Hills. It's right down the street, Dolph Hills. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
We used to go over there every Sunday.
Imagine owning Richard Pryor's old house.
It's kind of cool. Yeah.
Fuck. God, I don't want to go in there. Fucking, that spirit might hit me. He on fire, going to run past the swimming pool. You know, he was.
Cocaine days must have been crazy there.
Oh, man. And what's amazing about this. It's so cold, boy. When the stuff got on radio that Richard Pryor is in hospital in critical condition, from a pipe that blew up, his family went there and stole all of his people that he probably never seen and haven't seen in years. Jumped over that damn. You had this huge fence and stole all his watches and everything. All this stuff was taken out of his house. Then they say he's going to survive. They jump back over the fence and put it back.
No.
What?
They jump back over the fence with his stuff.
They put it back?
Yeah, they put it back. Richard Pryor, you're going to steal his stuff? You've been borrowed from him for 20 years. Now all of a sudden you're going to steal his watch?
That's crazy.
Yeah.
It's hard to be
but
at the
we
top.
Had so much fun over there. And Sammy Davis Jr. would come there every Sunday in a limousine and a tuxedo on. We got shorts on, you know, the raggedy shorts you can find, old T-shirt. Mm. We playing basketball. Sammy come up to high man. Sammy, go put some fucking shorts on.
How old was he back then?
Sammy?
Yeah.
Oh, I bet this was 76. So he must have been, he was young then. Because he died about 60. He was 62, 63.
Oh, really?
He must have been in his 50s, 40s, or 50s.
Tuxedo, huh?
Tuxedo.
And a limousine.
God, imagine being a fly and a guy on the wall. And Sammy Davis Jr. pulls up in a tuxedo.
Oh, man.
Steps out of a limousine.
We also.
Yeah,
while
they're playing basketball.
we also fucking raggedy, stinking. We didn't play ball all day long. Sammy walked past him. Hi, man. Sammy, wrong house, wrong day. Come on, play some ball with us, Sammy. But
look at that.
It was
Hey,
look at how sharp he is.
Wow, look at the bell bottoms.
Oh yeah, that's the day. That's the day, brother.
Wow. Yeah.
Richard played tennis.
Did he?
Yeah, he played tennis, yeah. And basketball. We playing ball, Richard. He checking me and grabbing my dick. I said, Richard, this ain't no basketball. Spoon, I can check it only way I know. I said, Richard, back off me, brother.
Oh, God.
He was a funny man.
So when you were around when Kinison came by, when he first when he first started working there, that was he was a big shift, right? That was a no one had seen anybody like him before.
Oh no, not even since.
Yeah. He was a very unusual dude.
What's so funny, one time he bought some Chinese food, put a hat on his head, with a long coat on and some big sunglasses, and ate it in front of this Korean store. Just standing in the window. He's outside, standing in the window, doing like that. Oh. Fucking Sam.
Why was he doing that?
He's just crazy. He had the same thing. he had the same thing on the stage at the Comedy Store. He would be up there with his sunglasses on, and he would have Chinese food or Korean food. And he'd sit there and eat and tell some jokes, and then go back to eating.
On stage?
In the original room.
That's fine.
I've seen them crazy. I've seen some crazy-ass people in the original room, but they were funny. The Comedy Store has a lot of history.
Oh, my God.
And Mitzi let him do it.
Yeah.
Mitzi was so nice to people. She was brilliant, let me tell you something.
She knew to let the comedians run the place.
She was smart. She would joke around about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the Island of Misfit Toys.
She called
But you know what? I try to tell her, I said, Mitzi, give the comics $5 to buy some eggs and bacon on the way home. She didn't want to do that. They don't deserve nothing. This is college. This is their college, Mitzi. Anybody paid to get in here, you better go on and get these people. They're going to mess up your room. And then when she went to a big stink with the strike, big stink. And then you had some people that were, you can tell some people crazy. What's his name? Jumped off the roof of the Hyatt House. What was his name? I knew his name. I knew the kid. I used to introduce him all the time. Oh, shit, I don't have his name right now. But I said, Mitch, just give them something, you know. So they think that they've done something since most of them drove out here. And they all want to they succeeded something. She's paying us for eggs, but she didn't want to do it. Yeah. Now I don't know how much they get today. How much you get? You don't know, do you? How much you get?
Paid? I'm not a regular, so
you get paid it.
You get a percentage of what the take is for the door.
Oh, that's good.
In the main room. Mm. So if the main room sold out, you can make money.
And yeah, they used to do that before.
I think the OR, you like
they've been doing that for
bucks,
a long time.
$25, right? $50.
Yeah, I think get $400 or $500 in the main room.
In the main room, you can make some money. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but for guys like us, it's more important as a place to exercise. It's like a gym.
Oh yeah,
I did two shows there last night.
I used to love to work with Richard Pryor. Boy, wow, what a wonderful. The audience is on every note, everything you say, they're right there.
Oh, I'd imagine.
Oh,
they must have realized too, because before, when you think about like real giant famous comedians before Pryor, there's like a tiny handful of them.
Yeah,
nobody like him. Mm-hmm. So he was just one of one back then.
I remember Red Fox used to come through there and I want to get me a double a Cavassier and a Coke. I ain't paying for none of this shit. Red was so funny, boy. Red, my man, Red.
I bought it. I was at a gas station stop one day, you know, in the little stores, and I had cassette tapes of Richard Pryor performing live at Red Fox's club.
When
Red Fox had a club. They just had a recorder, and he's just fucking around.
Oh, yeah.
You could tell he's ranting and raving.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He's just high, just laughing and talking shit on stage. Like, it's not prepared material, half of it. Mm. It was amazing.
What a character, Red Fox. That boy. He wouldn't pay his taxes. So the government came there one night when all the people in the room just took everything. Went to his house, took everything. He took a ring off his finger. He took his shoes. They took it and left him a chicken raw to cook in the oven. And so they shut him down, his place he had. I think it was on La Cienega somewhere.
It was in L.A., yeah.
In L.A., yeah. So he crying. Oh, he called Sammy Davis. Sammy called Frank Sinatra, and he told him, they took everything I own. I worked so hard to be who I am. I'm not just, I owe taxes, it ain't that bad. They took everything. So Frank Sinatra and Sammy Davis Jr. and some other friends went to his club and worked 2 or 3 weeks every night two shows, sold them out to get enough money to pay, get his taxes and get his club back. He was so happy to everybody. He said, oh, my God, I want to thank you for doing what this for me. Oh, please, just take my hug. Let me just hug you, hugging everybody. So they all went on their separate ways. Red Fox still didn't pay his fucking taxes.
No!
They come back again with a lien on his ass. You son of a bitch. They weren't coming. Frank Sinatra, they were not coming back now, see.
So, oh, my God.
Wouldn't pay his taxes again. He ain't paying no taxes.
Was this before or after Sanford and Son?
It was before, and I don't think he paid after Sanford and Son. He didn't believe in paying no taxes. It's my money. I paid my taxes.
Damn.
Yeah.
You got to pay them.
I had a tax problem. We had an apartment building in Beverly Hills, our own apartment building in Beverly Hills. I said, boy, I'm doing good. I just ride my car past there and say, that's my place. And I swear, the taxes got bad. If something happened to me, and they took that fucking place. I had to sell it. They didn't take it. I had to sell it. I hate that. Today, I hate that.
You hate all that money you missed, don't you?
Oh, God. Well, just a ride past. And look at the place. And some lady called. We had a person to clean up the place all the time, see? A manager of the hotel. And so my wife was out there watering the grass and stuff. And she called the police. Called him and said, there's a black lady out here watering the grass, and we don't recognize her.
And somebody who was a tenant, or are you talking about the manager?
Yeah, tenant. Called the manager. And he said, well, it's probably the owner. And it was Angela out there.
That's funny.
I used to go back there and sit, because they had the washing machine and dryer outside in the back near the parking lot. So it was outside, but it was enclosed. I sit out there, boy, it would be so quiet back there. I said, boy, this beat Detroit. Them dogs chasing my ass down the street. This is much better. I got a pocket full of money in. I ain't want to leave. I got a pocket full of money. I ain't want to leave. They got my ass out that damn place.
You need to make a podcast. Call it the Pocket Full of Money Podcast.
That's a bad idea. Have you ever thought about doing one?
Huh?
Have you thought about doing a podcast?
A podcast? What is that?
That's what we're doing right now.
I don't want this thing to be on the air.
You can't. He's in a different realm, Joe.
But you could sell out everywhere if he did that. I guarantee you. Yeah,
sell out
you can
where?
Make money off of
sell
it.
Out.
First of all,
somebody told me. Oh, I don't want to do comic club. I sell out anywhere. I sell out comic club. My club. I don't have trouble with those
theaters.
If I'm on, they don't pay enough money. You mean sell out? I go up there and do how many hours you have to do.
For a podcast?
Yeah.
Just do whatever you want. You could do it every time you're on a plane.
And do
just
you
talking to your phone.
Were you talking about how much time you do with the podcast or the theater? What are you talking about?
Podcast.
As much time as you want.
Well, say if I was in the theater and I'm doing a podcast. You got to sit at a thing like this and
no,
talk
no,
to
no.
You're not in a... See, I knew he crossed it. I was like, what?
I heard it.
He's saying, can you sell out theaters by yourself? That's what he asked you.
I doubt that.
Okay, so we established that. You sell out clubs, but then he was saying if you were doing a podcast, kind of like what we're doing right now, that's what this is, you could, as you build up the podcast, you could be promoting it and recording it. You wouldn't have to do it in a theater. You could do it in that comfort of your own home. You could
set it up.
Just like this.
Yeah. Just like this.
Yeah.
And then you become popular.
Sure.
I mean, you've got popularity behind you, so I'm sure people want to hear it.
100%.
Yeah.
Just people listening to this are going to want to hear it.
Yeah. I have a podcast with Paul. Me and my buddy Paul. We have a podcast.
What's it called?
The JD and Paul cast. It's just me and my buddy, and we talk like video games and... video games, technology, current events, and also like movie. We'll do little mini movie reviews on it.
What kind of setup do you have? Do you have
I'm like a tech dude, so I have everything. My office at my house is like decked out with a bunch of stuff. I brought him over there recently to help me. I get him to do videos with me just because it's like they're funny and I don't care. And like, let's just make something random. Because the other day we played Mortal Kombat, and I had him react to the fatalities. So I was like, that's a funny video. My dad reacts to Mortal Kombat fatalities. And literally, we're watching it. Literally, he's just like, oh, my, look at the head go left and right. No, this. So
it's amazing.
Yeah.
That stuff is
not. And that's on my gaming channel, which is Run JD Run on YouTube.
Wow,
which,
that stuff is too serious for me.
But like our podcast. But I've also had him play VR. So because he wanted to play VR real bad. He's like, yeah, I've seen you doing the virtual reality. Let me see you try that. So we did the one with the shark attack.
Oh,
where
God, that's another one.
This one wasn't even a game. It was just like a tutorial. Like, you just put it on and live through the thing, and it's like a deep ocean dive, and he was tripping out. It's like...
I saw the shark go past me.
Yeah. The shark's in his face, and he's screaming about it. He's like... And mind you, there was a point in the video where... He's not talking, but he's shaking. And I thought something bad was happening. I thought something was happening. I'm like, Dad, are you good? He was trying to kick and or strangle the shark, which was virtually in front of him. He was like this. And I'm like, Dad, you good? And he just yells out at the shark. He's like, fuck out of here. Like, get out of here, shark.
What's her name? Shelly was standing in the cage. The cage take you down in the water.
Yeah, I then bought him a PlayStation 4 to play the game at his house.
And I don't know what happened to any of that stuff.
Your son took it. My brother took it. Because my brother uses it for Netflix. He just watches the play.
There it is.
There we go. That's us. Look at him going crazy. Look.
Look at my neck.
Yeah, he's bugging. And that's me and my brother. We're going, we're like dying laughing about it.
That damn thing's over my head.
Oh, Jesus, look at his face.
Yeah.
Look at my neck. My eyeballs are down in my neck.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God. This is the show.
Yeah, no.
The show is you and him.
I try to create stuff with him all the time just because it's random and funny. Back in the day, I probably didn't do it because people, it's one of those things where it wasn't a huge deal. But now
we're just watching this. What is the video titled, Jamie, for people? My dad freaks out playing VR.
Look at that. I didn't see the shark behind me. Look at that.
The YouTube channel is...
Get away.
It's on my channel, which is youtube.com/... Run JD Run is the name of the channel.
My face is cramping from laughing.
You gotta see it in its entirety. It's so goofy.
This is a show. Dude. You two together. You do it once a week. Get together with your dad. Just go pick him up. Grab him. Make it real easy. Bring him to your place. You do a show with him once a week.
Yeah.
Boom. That's it.
Might have to do an audio thing.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, because the setup, an audio thing. Yeah.
What's an audio thing?
Easy. This. Podcast. Like this here.
Or a podcast.
We gotta find a name. We got to find a name.
I'm going to go finish packing. I got to get out of here.
All right, let's wrap this up.
Get to my wine. What would you
Joe, he's the king of complaining, man. I'm trying to tell you. I tried to tell him on the way over here. I'm like, hey, man, don't be weird. Right? Let's just hang out, amazing. Enjoy it.
Come on.
I'm going to do my thing, JD. But if I got to do my thing, I'm going to do my thing. I got to pee, I'm going to pee. If I got to take a shit, I'm going to take a shit. Right? Oh, my God.
My face hurts right here. It hurts. It's like these muscles are cramped up.
You a goofball, man.
Anyway,
you ain't got no cooth. Where your cooth at?
John, I appreciate you.
There ain't no cooth. What is cooth?
It's nonsense. It's for lesser mortals.
Yeah, he's a clown, bro.
I appreciate you, sir. Thank you very much for being here, man.
Were we at Jamie's place when you worked?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's probably when we first met.
You must have been young. You were a little kid then.
Yeah, I was a little kid. I was in my 20s.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Back in the day, man.
I was about 60.
Wow.
It was about 15 years ago, 14 years ago.
Probably somewhere out there. Maybe more than that, even.
Maybe more than that.
Yeah, more than that when I met you.
Yeah.
Yeah. More like 20,
maybe late
20
50s
something.
Or something.
I probably was doing the Wayne Brothers or something back then.
Yeah, you were.
Yeah, that's probably what it was.
Oh, you were in your 40s.
Friday.
Yeah.
Probably doing Friday.
Doing Friday, the Wayne Brothers. Yeah, all that.
Yeah.
It's been a long time, my friend.
Oh, man, it's amazing.
Thank you. You're hilarious. It's a pleasure having you on here.
Podcast, huh?
Yep, that's what we're doing.
Yes, a podcast.
You guys are going to do it, too. We got to come up with a name. Let me know. I'll have you back on. We can just talk about your dad. We'll figure it out.
Oh, my goodness.
Give your Twitter handle, your Instagram, all that jazz.
Oh, yeah. At JD Witherspoon everywhere. And if you want to see those gaming videos, it's Run JD Run on YouTube. That's me. And then you got your joints at John Witherspoon.
I have something like that.
Oh, man, this is so hard. You understand?
I don't have nothing like that.
Joe, he thinks he's in a simulation. He thinks he's in the Matrix.
He might be correct.
The internet is crazy to him. But
thank you, gentlemen.
What's that, John?
John,
that's,
John, B. John Witherspoon is the where your cooking show is at on YouTube. Just type in John Witherspoon on the internet. JD Witherspoon, if you want to see some goofy stuff, we're here.
Thank you, gentlemen.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for having us, John.
All right.
That's it.